91.3 KXCI Tucson, Real People, Real Radio. Hello, Tucson. Thanks for joining us today at KXCI, where you get to listen to real people from our real community. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host Aspen Green, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our programs on our Broad Perspectives Radio page at kxci.org. Well, today we have a very impressive guest, activist Pamela Yates, who is also a documentary filmmaker. She's going to talk about her latest film, Borderland, The Line Within, which deals with immigration and refugee issues. Now, Aspen and I were lucky enough to get a preview of this film. And let me tell you, it is a very realistic, intimate, and emotional portrayal of real people caught in these systems. So Aspen, tell us about Pamela.
First, I want to thank Beverly Seckinger for giving us this wonderful opportunity and contact. Pamela Yates is an American documentary filmmaker, as you said, Kathy, and human rights activist. She is the co-founder and creative director of Skylight, a nonprofit human rights media organization. She directed the Sundance Film Festival award-winning When the Mountains Tremble and is the executive producer of the Academy Award-winning Witness to War, and the director of State of Fear, The Truth About Terrorism, which was awarded the Overseas Press Club Award. Her film Granito, which was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship, was used as key evidence in the genocide trial against Efrain Rios Montt in Guatemala. Her third film in the Guatemalan trilogy, 500 Years, had its world's premiere at the Sundance Film Festival and was broadcast on PBS. Her latest film, Borderland, The Line Within, which came out this year, brings the saga of Skylight's Guatemalan trilogy full circle back to the U.S., from the impact of U.S. foreign policy that backed brutal regimes, leading to the root causes of migration, to the present situation of mass migration from Central America. And we are here to talk about the new film, Borderland, The Line Within, being presented by the Docscapes film series here in Tucson at The Loft on Sunday, September 29th. Docscapes is a collaborative project of the Hanson Film Institute and the Center for Documentary Initiative at the University of Arizona. Welcome to our show, Pamela.
Thank you so much, Aspen and Kathy.
We are so thrilled you're with us today. Let's start by asking what your path was to becoming a political activist and a human rights defender. What motivated you? Was it something that you witnessed directly or just your desire to make a better world?
Well, I'm from a coal mining region in the Appalachian Mountains of Pennsylvania. I'm from a town of 2,000 people. Even though it was economically a very poor area of the country, culturally, it was a very rich part of the country. And the richness of the culture was in its storytelling. And my father was a great storyteller. And your popularity in the town depended on how good a storyteller you were. So I like to think that I'm carrying on the legacy of my Irish-American ancestors by taking the storytelling into the filmic realm. I really was inspired by the growth of the human rights movement worldwide. I didn't even know what human rights were. And when I learned about it, and I learned about the people who were trying to call out violations of human rights and trying to chart a path forward, I thought they are incredible heroes and heroines. And wouldn't it be great to be able to tell stories about them and share these ideas of contemporary human rights with the rest of the world? I was watching as that was unfolding. I was watching how in Latin America, for example, so many countries with military dictatorships, the human rights movements were the ones that ended those dictatorships and restored democracy to their countries. And so that was the combination. It was my upbringing, plus the growth of the human rights movement worldwide, and the power of cinema, which is like no other. The power of cinema, which is the storytelling medium of our time.
So you decided that documentaries were the way for you to respond to human injustice and have humane conversations and build counter-narratives.
In my household, Irish-American enclave, right, there wasn't a lot of emotion. We didn't express emotion about happiness, about sadness, about melancholy. And when I first started to go to the movies when I was 6 years old, the first film I remember seeing was To Kill a Mockingbird. All of a sudden, I began to experience emotions, which is normal for any human being. But to see them being able to be expressed in cinematic offerings was just an incredible revelation. So my early emotional life was lived in the cinema, not really in my household or in my school. Okay. And so I thought if I could take some of the things that I was raised to understand and believe about how social movements grow, who they're up against, what are violations of human rights, and incorporate them into very human and emotional stories in cinema, that it would be a great and powerful combination.
I suppose that's how Skylight got started, your media organization. You want to talk a bit about it and its mission?
Sure. Well, we started Skylight 40 years ago. I started it with Peter Kanoy, the co-founders. And we, as you said, we're a nonprofit media organization that now for over 40 years has combined cinematic arts with the quest for justice to inspire the defense of human rights. And our films and programs strengthen social justice movements and catalyze collaborative networks of artists and filmmakers. So we try to take not only the films, but all of the work we've done around impact and outreach with our films and share our model with the rest of the world through our programs. But every single film that we do, we also have a multi-year outreach and impact campaign. The Abrazos Tour, in which we're coming to Tucson, is part of our impact campaign. Now it's a 27-city tour that we're going to be doing between now and the presidential elections.
Okay. So it's been 40 years or so since you directed When the Mountains Tremble. You can briefly discuss the trilogy of films, the Resistance Saga, because it'll help us understand what your involvement is with Guatemala. Maybe you can discuss why you went to Guatemala in the first place and what was going on that you witnessed that you wanted to share.
I first went to Guatemala in 1982 to investigate the role that the United States was playing and had played there. I had found out, and it made me so angry, that the United States, my government, had overthrown the democratically elected president of Jacobo Arbenz in 1954. It was one of the first CIA coups. And that had ushered in a legacy of brutal military dictatorships. I thought, if only in my youthful hubris, I thought, if only I could bring this story back to the American public and they knew about it, that they would be as outraged as I was. And, you know, anger is a really great catalyst for making art. It's a fantastic channel as well, rather than taking it out in some other way. Have a joyful experience of making art. What was going on internally in Guatemala and the quest for democracy there and the role of the indigenous Mayans in the quest for democracy was so interesting. And they had such important ideas that I decided that that would be the perspective. It's also a film about the United States and the United States role and the role that they played in the war. In 1982, we were really worried about the United States starting a wider war in Central America. You know, the government had extricated itself from Vietnam, and now it was very invested in El Salvador and against Nicaragua, as sending military trainers to Guatemala. So we thought that if we could bring this story back to the American public, we could help stop a wider war in Central America.
Okay. Do you feel that you were able to make a real contribution to the cause and perhaps shift public opinion?
Well, I think that any change in policy or in politics is always made up of a number of things and a number of people's efforts. I would like to think that our effort was part of that in stopping a wider war in Central America. But I do know that it made me believe in staying connected to people and places throughout my filmmaking. And in terms of Guatemala and the Guatemalan trilogy, we made three films over 35 years that told a similar story, but from a different historical perspective. And When the Mountains Tremble in 1982 because I traveled with the film, with the protagonist of the film, Rigoberta Menchú Tum, mm-hmm. it helped put Rigoberta on the world stage. And 10 years later, she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, the first Indigenous person to be awarded that, and at that time, the youngest.
That is so great.
So in that sense, the film did have a contribution, our little granito de arena, our tiny grain of sand, to making a change, because Rigoberta is the one who went on to say, hey, a genocide happened in Guatemala, and we should hold those responsible for that genocide. And that is the story of the second film in the Guatemala trilogy, Granito, How to Nail a Dictator. All these different forces coming together to build a genocide case and take it to the Guatemalan courts.
Wow, that's really an important contribution.
And then the third film is 500 years, which is when the case actually was adjudicated in the courts of Guatemala. And it's about what kind of effect that had in terms of popular mobilizing and a citizen uprising to bring democracy back to Guatemala. So that is my history with Guatemala.
Okay. Were the people in Guatemala able to see these films? Were they available for them?
Always, absolutely, and totally. There are many ways that we have gotten the films out. First of all, When the Mountains Tremble was not able to be seen in Guatemala till 2003 because of the military dictatorship there. But what I found out when I went to show it in 2003 is that people had taken VHS videotapes and they had made copies of copies of copies, and they had shown them clandestinely throughout the war and the intervening years. So that was very satisfying. But also, we always give our films to the biggest pirater in Guatemala. His name is El Buki. You know, you want a human rights film to be pirated, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So all of our films are in those big sheets of vinyl that you see in marketplaces in Latin America, where all the other great films are pirated and are available. We've made Quiche and Ixil, two different Mayan language versions of our film. And we always make everything in English and Spanish. We try to give our films away for free, especially to the people that it's their story. I'm not going to sell the film back to the people who created the story. And we've had some great partnerships in getting the film out in Guatemala.
So even now, we can see the first three films of the trilogy if we wanted to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can just go to our website.
And that website is skylight.is.
A lot of people see them on YouTube as well. And what are you going to do?
I guess as long as the word gets out, you can't be bothered about which way people get to see it.
I'm happy that they see it.
Right.
Whatever way.
So what's different about Borderland, The Line Within, than other documentaries you have made?
It's a film about the United States. I believe that if you're going to work internationally, you also should have a critique of your own country. And Borderland is my critique of the United States. But it also marries, it unites the work that we've done in Latin America with the United States. When Donald Trump was first elected president, I wanted to make a film in the United States. And I wanted to make one that really focused on people living here who were finding creative ways of resisting immigration policies that administration was positing. Hey, I started the film in Tucson, Arizona.
That's
where I started talking to people. And as I started to talk to people, I realized that it wasn't just the Trump administration, that this whole contemporary policy had started under Clinton. And people in Tucson were so well-versed and so knowledgeable and had such interesting perspectives.
I saw you had John Fife in your film, and we all
John
know
Fife
him from the sanctuary
film.
Movement.
Yeah, and all of the people. I mean, Beverly Sechinger helped me connect to so many people, as did John Fife and people from No More Deaths. You know, the work that has been done in Tucson, it makes me really satisfied to be able to go full circle, because this film took 5 years to make. So 5 years later, full circle, back to Tucson.
The border issue is huge for Tucson folks. I'm so glad that you got to connect with people here. It affects so many lives of families that we know. We're going to take a music break right now. And when we come back, we'll talk more about your latest documentary, Borderland, The Line Within.
Thank you.
Kathy, what do we have for today's music?
Okay, so it is time for a music break, but I have to say how fascinating this discussion is. I loved your film so much, and now, of course, I have to go back and see the first three that you made. The song that you have chosen for today is called Pueblos, and it's by Sarah Korducic, which she co-wrote and performed with Lila Downs. Do you want to tell us why you chose this song and what it's about?
Well, Sarah Korducic was a musician on both 500 Years, and she wrote the soundtrack and performs the music in Borderland, The Lion Within. I just thought this is such a great and exuberant expression.
You know, the song was released to coincide with the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. The song celebrates Native people and their journey for equality and freedom. Sarah is also an activist in defense of women's and Indigenous peoples' rights. For her work as an activist, she won the MIAW Transformer Award at the 2021 MTV Millennial Awards and was selected for Ford Fellowship Foundation Global Fellowship Program. She's a very impressive person. So let's listen to Pueblos by Sarah Korducic.
Sembrando los pueblos con la esperanza en el aliento. Van por los caminos con su corazón retumbando. Dignidad.
91.3 KXCI Tucson, and we're returning to our interview with Pamela Yates, director of the film Borderland, The Line Within.
In the title Borderland, The Line Within, what does The Line Within represent?
So many immigrants have told me that the border is inside them, that anywhere they go, no matter where they are in the United States, no matter where they may live, that at any moment they can be captured, incarcerated, and deported. And so they feel that the border is not a geographical line in the southwestern United States, but rather it is something that they carry inside themselves. And so I wanted to include both borderland and the line within in the title to signify that as a sign of respect.
Why was it important for you to tell Kasia's story? Because Borderland, the line within, is a lot about his story. What was going on in the Mayan community at that time?
Well, I've always thought it was important to stay connected to people and places where we've made films. And Kash has a part in 500 Years, the third film in the Guatemala trilogy. So I kept in touch with him all these years. Being a human rights and especially an environmental defender in Guatemala, in areas of the country where the land is mineral rich, is an extremely risky proposition. And because of the effectiveness of his advocacy to keep the ancestral lands in his own Mayan community, he was constantly under attack. So one day I got a WhatsApp message that said, "Pamela, I'm leaving Guatemala. My life is being threatened and I have no choice. I have to leave." And I said, "Don't go. I've been working in the southwestern United States in the Sonoran Desert, and it's really dangerous. I'm really concerned about you." And he said, "Too bad, I've already left." And so I asked him if we could document his story together as he traveled by foot across Mexico to the border with the United States. And he said, yes. He's a beautiful writer. I asked him while he was waiting in safe houses to make the next legs of the journey, if he would write and he would send me those WhatsApp and he would videotape and then he could erase them from his phone. It was very risky for him because the coyotes, the guides, don't allow you to take photographs or videos, but he did it surreptitiously and he wrote beautifully. And together we documented that part of his journey.
And it took him a long time. It was several years before he got into the United States. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Several years.
Yeah.
I know.
I just want to say that as we watched the film, I was worried about him getting caught taking all these films on his phone. I get what a brave guy to do that.
Yeah.
I know. Kasia and I share the belief that when you feel impotent to stop human rights violations, it's really important to document them because you never know how they're going to be used in the future. And in this case, I didn't actually think about including him in the film, which I had already started. But as it continued, as his journey became so darn dramatic, I decided that this would be a very important story to tell in the film. Kash and Gabriela Castañeda are the lead protagonists in the film, but there are many other people that have important roles to play in Borderland.
You know, I was wondering if Borderland can be used to strengthen the local work being done on the border in Arizona. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And we're all in for that, for making the film available. We want you to come to the Loft Cinema on Sunday, September 29th at 4 p.m. But for organizations, we also make the film available to you so that you can strengthen the work that you're already doing and even raise funds with the film. We want the film to be able to help organizations doing the work.
You know, I can't help but wonder where Kash is today and whether he's been able to reunite with his family or not.
He still lives in Florida. He has a good job. And he's been very active in the International Mayan League, which is an organization that helps promote indigenous language and indigenous rights in the United States. And he's also trained to be a Spanish Maya Ishil translator. And now he is learning English so he can be a trilingual translator. That's the upside. The downside is that he's not yet had his final asylum hearings. So he hasn't seen his family since 2019. And he even has a daughter that was born after he left Guatemala that he's never seen.
Oh.
So this is the tragedy that people fleeing their countries and repression and threats against their lives are facing in the United States.
It really makes my heart ache that people have to go through this. Can you tell us why they say that immigration is a profitable business?
A really important element of the film is a group of immigrants who are PhDs at Columbia University. They call themselves the XP Method, and they call themselves digital humanists. And so many people ask me, what's a digital humanist?
I had to look that up.
Digital humanists are, in this case, scholars, where they're using the intersection of humanities with computing and digital technologies. In Borderland, the line within, the digital humanists are the ones who are exposing the apparatus of the border industrial complex. The billions of dollars of our tax money that is being spent to stop immigrants from coming in this country once they're here, to imprison them, and then to keep track of them. All of those things are money-making contracts, which are dealt out every year. In 2024, the budget of the border industrial complex is $25 billion.
Wow.
And so these are companies and private contractors that are making money off the suffering of immigrants in our country. And I think this is the revelatory aspect of Borderland, The Line Within. You know, every film you make, you want to be able to contribute something to our understanding and knowledge, not just our emotional knowledge, also our scholarly knowledge too. And there have been so many great films made about immigration and immigration in our country. So we wanted to contribute something else. And I think the thing else that we've contributed is the unmasking of the border industrial complex, how it works, where the money's spent, and who is profiting from it? Who's profiting from the suffering of regressive immigration policies in the United States?
I think that was the most painful part for me, learning about that whole infrastructure, and scary, very scary as well.
Because we feel complicit in it, right? Because we're American citizens who pay taxes.
I mean, and the way you said, you could be walking down any street anywhere and you don't know if you're walking by a place where people are being detained. And that seemed very scary to me, too.
And I believe that people in Tucson and along the border are like much more hip to what's going on than people in other parts of the country. So,
well, unfortunately, we don't have much more time today. But I just wanted to let everybody know that on September 29th at the Loft Theater at 4 p.m., it's free admission. You want to get there early. And is there going to be a Q&A afterwards?
There is a Q&A. Paco de Onís, the producer, and I will be there. And we look forward to speaking to everybody and hearing from you as well.
All right. Oh, thank you so much for being on our show today. It's such a huge, important issue. And for us in Tucson, we feel it on a daily basis.
It affects a lot of people in our area. I cannot thank you enough for the work that you have done.
Thank you so much for having me, Aspen. And thank you, Kathy.
Well, thank you, Pamela, for being here. We really appreciate it. And as usual, this is a topic we could do a whole day on, but we only have this half hour today, and it is up. So, Pamela Yates, thank you so much for coming to talk about your new film, Borderland, The Line Within. You are an inspiration, tackling such difficult issues in such a personal and sincere way. And thanks to all of you out there for listening to Broad Perspectives Radio. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host, Aspen Green. And again, you can hear more of our shows on our Broad Perspectives Radio page at kxci.org. For now, please stay tuned, because next up we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.